The death toll due to Karding stands at 8. Local government units urged to build their own green walls as a shield against future typhoons. We'll tackle that with Aurora Governor Dax Cua. President Marcos appoints retired Chief Justice Lucas Bersamin as Executive Secretary. We'll talk about that with political analyst Professor Tony Lavinia. And Philippine stocks on track to enter bear market. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, the death toll from Typhoon Karding stands at 8. The fatalities include 5 rescuers in Bulacan. Authorities also recorded significant agricultural losses, while damage to infrastructure was minimal.
Ang agriculture natin ang suffered most from this typhoon. 160 million worth of damage to agriculture has been reported by our department concerned, and close to 3,780 affected farmers and fisher folks.
More than 11,000 families across Luzon were also forced to evacuate, but many have returned to their homes. Meanwhile, power distributor Meralco said as of Tuesday morning, only 3,800 households remain without power, most of which are in San Miguel, Bulacan. Ports in Luzon have resumed normal operations after being pounded by Typhoon Karding. Aside from disruptions in port services, the Philippine Coast Guard says there were no reports of any untoward incidents. The PCG credits it to adequate disaster preparedness.
Naka-standby na po ang ating mga tauhan at nagpag-coordinate po tayo sa mga local government units kung kinakailangan po yung ating mga barko na magdala ng mga relief doon sa mga isla na nasalanta ay naka-standby po tayo.
An environmental group calls on government to declare a climate emergency following the onslaught of Typhoon Karding. Aksyon Klima convener Rodney Galicia says, aside from empowering local government units to deal with disasters, a climate emergency declaration puts the Marcos administration in a better position to ask for climate reparations in the upcoming United Nations Climate Change Conference in Egypt.
If we have that institutionalization of climate emergency, and that includes actually loss and damages and nationally determined contribution, then we have that document. If that will be part of the law of the land, then we can lobby. At the level of the United Nations. We'll be able to actually make them accountable, and of course, influence them, force them if necessary, in diplomatic terms. No. To actually sit down with us, and instead of us asking for loans, we need to have more grants and through diplomacy and through, you know, demanding climate justice.
Weather experts are one in saying the effects of Typhoon Karding could have been way worse if not for the Sierra Madre mountain range, which acted as a shield for Luzon. The governor of Quirino, Dax Cua, now urging local government units to build their own green walls to protect them from future weather disturbances. Governor Cua now joins us here on the program. He's also the president of the Union of Local Authorities of the Philippines. Governor, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Good afternoon to all your viewers and listeners.
All right. So first off, what's the realization here? The storm has passed. Philippine area. It's now out of the Philippine area of responsibility. The province is still reeling from the effects of Super Typhoon Karding. What's the realization?
The realization, Carmina, is nothing new, no. But it's more of the urgency of collective action. Ito naman palagi yung panawagan natin, how all stakeholders, local governments together with national government and private stakeholders can band together against climate change. We need to work together on this. Dito sa Quirino, we are dependent on the Sierra Madre for our economy. We would like to appeal that we should treat climate change together with economy. They are not two separate things. No, they're intertwined. And once we neglect our natural resources, our ecological balance, then we are poorly planning for our future economy.
And so this call to action to build a green wall to safeguard all of us against typhoons, how will this be done, Governor?
Well, tama yung initial reaction ng ating Pangulo. No? Even before this happened, during his birthday, he called for tree planting in different parts of the nation. And that's one key component of this call to action. Imagine we're 110 Filipinos, no? 110 million Filipinos. If only each of us would plant one tree every birthday, so we would be planting 110 million trees every year. And it wouldn't be so burdensome. It would be very easy, something we do annually lang. And if we could do more than the minimum, then we can have much more than 110 million trees every year. And I think it's time for us to take this seriously, put forth policies. I would call on my neighbors along the Sierra Madre mountain range. Tayo na po siguro manguna dito sa Cagayan, Isabela, Quirino, Vizcaya, all the way up to Quezon. Let's all band together, start these programs about building green walls, especially in the Sierra Madre, and maybe the other provinces will follow suit if they see the value in these green walls.
Well, you know, Governor, it's refreshing to be able to talk to a governor like you who really cares for the environment and, you know, who thinks about climate change not just as a phenomenon, but something that could really affect your constituents. But real talk now, we know that many of your colleagues don't see the same thing. In fact, many of them in the past, maybe even now, have also been enablers of deforestation. What are you prepared to tell them, your colleagues who are in on it or who have been in on it?
I think the key here, Carmina, is to make it a complete sustainable solution. We cannot go too far on one side of the spectrum. We need to really sit down, like you said, real talk. What are the things we can do? And what are the low-hanging fruits? And let's start from there. Let's start small. Let's start with something doable. Like I said, 110 million trees a year is something that's doable. That's only one tree per person in a year, no? So those are things that we can do, and we should start talking about them or how to implement them or how to monitor them. It's one thing to plant the tree. It's another thing to sustain that tree until it matures and grows, and we build forest cover for our environment. So it really needs a lot of planning and real talk, like you said, and to make it sustainable. If harvesting and extraction is part of the plan, then let us manage the harvesting and the extraction in a way that it becomes sustainable while maintaining our green walls for protection and for future preservation.
Because we know, I mean, I'm reading through your statement, and in the end you said the Philippines is estimated to have lost about 90% of its original forest cover since the Spanish occupation. 90%. That's a lot. And we all know what has happened in the past. Some government officials have been enablers of illegal logging all over the country. So on one hand, you're calling for tree planting, but what about illegal logging and a stop to that?
Yeah, that's right. That's something that we need to collectively do. Like you said, and I would like to echo again, we need to work together and have real talk. What are the things that we really can do without and cannot, right? What is the level of extraction that can be sustained by our natural resources that are available today, and what is in excess of that sustainability, so that we can educate the community properly, and we can manage how much can really be done together. Mm. And at the same time, with every extraction, we can require plantations so that it's always going to be sustainable. Every action has to have a mitigating measure so that we can have sustainability for the future generations.
So as you say that, we got to talk about Kaliwa Dam, Governor Kua. I just spoke with the project manager from the SWSS earlier today, and he said they're going to have to cut down some 12,000 trees to give way to the Kaliwa Dam project. Sure, he said, they're going to be planting way more than that because they're cutting 12,000 trees. But these trees that they're going to plant, that's going to take some time before these trees grow. What is your sense of the Kaliwa Dam project? It's going to affect your province too. Is there more gains here than are there more benefits to it than what environmental defenders have been saying?
Well, Carmina, I have to admit that I need to see the calculations first. Kaliwa Dam, which is an essential project of the government, will be in Quezon, no? It's supposed to provide water for most of Metro Manila, and it's supposed to give lots of productivity for our economy. So it has to be measured against what are the environmental costs and what are the economic costs of that environmental cost. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way I would see a logical balancing act, so that we can mitigate and we can plan whatever cost we will incur for the future and make sure that there's a way to rehabilitate that in the shortest possible term.
Okay, and finally, we are seeing a lot of pictures of destruction and damage brought about by Super Typhoon Karding. And of course, you talked about climate change a while ago. We have to talk about loss and damage and climate finance to be able to address this. In your province, for example, how will you address loss and damage due to weather disturbances, to superstorms, to be able to help your constituents build back better?
Yeah, so that's the primary purpose of government and policy. We need to ensure that crops are insured so that they can be properly financed. We need to ensure that services and government facilities are insured, whether by insurance or by government itself, to ensure that the delivery of basic services will not be hampered. But at the same time, we need to make sure, as we all know, local governments have our 5% calamity fund, and we hope that there could be reforms in national DRRM financing and budgeting policies. Mm. No? There seems to be some gaps, and we hope that those gaps can be addressed. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when a project or a damaged facility is reported to a national government agency by way of the NDRIM, sana itong project na to ay hindi na mahirapan, kundi it should be assured of funding in the succeeding budget already, if not yet addressed in the current calamity fund or Mm-mm. QRF. No? So we have to ensure that the damage and the rehabilitation takes primordial priority before other developmental priorities. Diba? Kasi we need to rehabilitate before we can build further.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I noticed, especially, you know, we've been covering a lot of these, the aftermath of storms. It's the crucial days after, the first few days after the storm has passed, when citizens would try to build their homes back up. Hindi po ba pwedeng isama dun sa pre-position goods at kasama dun sa mga ibibigay sa mamamayan yung materyales para makapag pundar ulit sila ng kanilang mga bahay? Because as it is, they're gonna have to look for a hardware, And chances are hardware stores are also closed. Or worse, they're going to jack up prices because, you know, their business suffered as well. Is that something that's worth looking into?
That's a great idea. But I know of LGUs that already do that. One of their quick response mitigating measures is really to provide GI sheets, nails, hollow blocks, bags of cement to those who have been damaged by the typhoon, no? Or other calamities. So that's a very good idea. And perhaps with that suggestion, we can do some institutionalization and some innovation in procurement processes so that we ensure that prices of those commodities, or even price watch, so that prices of those commodities in the market in places under state of calamity are regulated somehow.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Quirino Governor Dakila Kua there, who's also the president of ULAP, the Union of Local Authorities of the Philippines. Really appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you.
Now, as we reported earlier, the death toll from Typhoon Karding now stands at 8. For more on this, as well as the latest figures from the Disaster Management Agency, we're now joined by our very own Bianca Dava. Bianca, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. The reported death toll due to Super Typhoon Karding has climbed to 8, according to the NDRRMC. 5 of the fatalities were veteran rescuers killed in a flash flood in Bulacan. 2 fatalities were reported in Zambales and 1 in Quezon Province, but the disaster agency said these are still up for verification. 3 missing people were also reported in Mercedes, Camarines Norte. In its 8 a.m. situational report, the NDRRMC said over 16,000 families or 60,000 individuals were affected by the onslaught of the typhoon. From barangays in Ilocos Region, Cagayan Valley, Central Luzon, Calabarzon, Bicol Region, Nimaropa, and Cordillera Administrative Region. Of this number, more than 12,000 families are staying in evacuation centers, and the remaining of the total affected population are seeking shelter in other places. Assistant Secretary Rafi Alejandro, the spokesperson of the NDRRMC, said the typhoon left an estimated 160 million pesos in agricultural damage before leaving the Philippine area of responsibility, affecting some 3,780 farmers and fisher folks. The NDRRMC has so far reported the estimated cost of damage to infrastructure at 3 million pesos, but Alejandro admitted rebuilding homes will be a challenge as Karding destroyed many houses in its path. A total of 13 roads and 16 bridges are not passable in Cagayan Valley, Central Luzon, and Calabarzon. Power outages were also experienced in 99 cities and municipalities, of which 28 have already restored a power supply. Meanwhile, communication lines are still being fixed in 5 areas in Calabarzon and 1 in Ilocos Region. Carmina, a total of 1.6 million pesos worth of assistance has so far been provided to affected residents, according to the NDRRMC. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Bianca Dava. Back here in the newsroom, the province of Nueva Ecija declared a state of calamity due to widespread destruction caused by Typhoon Karding. Jervis Manahano joins us with the latest. Jervis, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, the local government unit of Nueva Ecija released data on the effect of Typhoon Karding in the province. As of 8 a.m. today, the affected families are now at 2,123, while is equal to 13,025 individuals. There are still 164 evacuation centers in the entire province of Nueva Ecija, and partially damaged houses is now at 5,699, while totally damaged houses is at 803. The local government officials also did an aerial survey and saw big damage on agriculture. Power supply has been partially restored in Cabanatuan City. According to the CDRRMO in Cabanatuan, 60% of the city regained power late last night. Classes in all levels are still suspended, but work in government offices resumed today. The province also is now under the state of calamity after local government officials passed their resolution yesterday afternoon. As of late afternoon yesterday, there are still impassable roads due to fallen electric posts, but clearing operations are underway. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jervis Manahan, there joining us on the line. Take care, Jervis. And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, Manila's top economist believes the Philippines remains on track to reach its growth target for the year, despite the devastation caused by Typhoon Karding. The local stock market, though, is painting a grimmer picture. Details of those stories and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. Back with more news. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. The families of the five rescuers who died in Bulacan due to Typhoon Karding, well, they're appealing for help. Katrina Domingo now joins us with that story. Kat?
Carmina, that's right. More benefits and a better program for all rescue and disaster workers. That's the kind of help that the family of the rescuers who died in Bulacan want. They say that the tragic death of their loved ones should not go in vain. The family members that we've spoken to say that the tragic incident that happened in the town of San Miguel yesterday should serve as an eye-opener, not only for the province, but for the entire country, that the work and the passion and that the dedication that rescuers put into their job is no easy task, and that they need all the help that they can get. They say that while the work of their departed loved ones may always involve some risk, it could always be prevented. They want more backup. They want more communication systems installed for other rescuers who are still living to prevent similar incidents from happening in the future, especially because, as we all know, the Philippines is part of the world's typhoon belt. Carmina, right now we're here in Santa Maria, Bulacan, where the remains of Gerson Resurrection remain. He is the team leader of the San Miguel rescue team, and his wife tells us that this has been Gerson's passion since he was young. His family lived near a river. That's why since he was a teenager, he was already used to saving people from drowning or any other, basically any other neighbor who needs help. He would extend that kind of help. He says that she knows that there are a lot of other Gersons out there in the Philippines who may be able to save more lives if only the government can provide them with more assistance, with more help, and if only the government can further improve their preparations ahead of any disaster and calamity. Hermina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there, joining us live from Bulacan. And back here in the newsroom, Typhoon Karding, internationally known as Noru, is now headed to Vietnam. Let's now get the latest on the weather from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist, Ariel Roaz. Ariel? Hey, Ariel? Okay, we're going to try and get him back on the line. That was ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Moving on to other news for now. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. appoints retired Supreme Court Chief Justice Lucas Bersamin as his new executive secretary. Bersamin took his oath Tuesday morning and he attended the cabinet meeting right after. He replaced Vic Rodriguez, who resigned this month but will continue serving as the presidential chief of staff. Rodriguez's resignation came just days after he was cleared by the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee in the sugar importation fiasco. Bersamin was one of the chief justices appointed by former President Rodrigo Duterte. He retired in 2019 and was appointed as chairman of government-owned insurance system GSIS. All right, we now have him back on the line, Ariel Rojas. Go ahead, Ariel.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. With external name Noru left the Philippine Area of Responsibility 8 p.m. last night. It is not affecting the country anymore and will be making its third landfall in Vietnam tomorrow. Here in the country, the southwest monsoon or Habagat continues to prevail in the western parts of the country. Zambales, Bataan, Palawan, Occidental Mindoro, Western Visayas, Tawi-Tawi, Sulu, Basilan, and Zamboanga Peninsula will experience monsoon rain today. Flooding and landslides are possible in these areas. Intense afternoon thunderstorms will also be felt in the Ilocos region, Cagayan Valley, the rest of Central Luzon, Zone, Samar, Caraga, and Davao region. Bicol and Caraga will also have evening thunderstorms. Metro Manila will be mostly sunny until early afternoon with chances of afternoon or evening thunderstorms. Tomorrow, it's growing the Philippine Sea. Meanwhile, a low-pressure area is being monitored outside the Philippine area of responsibility. It was last located 1,510 kilometers east of Central Luzon. We entered the PAR today and will track northwest part. It will fade tomorrow or Thursday near Batanes. No direct effect on the country is expected. The latest weather, View Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas there. In business, local stocks are on track to enter a bear market after falling by 20% from a high in February. Michelle Long now joins us with details. Michelle, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. What a way to resume trade after being on break yesterday because of bad weather. And of course, let's not forget the Dow also entering bear market territory overnight. So Philippine shares looks like are following that path. The PSEI ending morning trade at 60.18. For the morning, down 3.85%. Essentially, we are 20% off our February peaks, which in our case was at 75.02. Also, if you look at the really, if you look at the stocks this morning, the most actively traded stocks, it's a sea of red. And it's no wonder we're down so much. If you look at the numbers here, Ayala Land, for example, most actively sold down stock, down 4.6%. SM Investments, 4.9%. BDO, 2.2%. Ayala Corp, 6.5%. URC, 3.2%. SM Prime, 4.7%. BPI, 4.9%. It's a sea of red, really, when you look at the blue chips and how they're performing this morning. Let's not forget, it's not just the stock markets that's tumbling. It's also the peso, which continues to hit all-time lows. The peso hitting 58.995 intraday, which really tells you 59, 60, they're just around the corner. We're all on track as well to tumble to new all-time lows for the day. But the weighted average for the peso this morning is at 58.88. Now, all of this poor performance from the stocks and the currencies happening amid concerns over rising inflation, rising interest rates, and slowing growth. Earlier, we talked to Manulife Investments' Sue Trin, and she talked about how it's all but normal for markets to perform badly in this macro context of stagflation, which is simply characterized by slow growth and high inflation. But she did say there might be a reason to be a little bit more optimistic about Philippine shares. Let's take a listen.
There is a time and a place for seasonality, and that's when all else is held constant. And what matters currently is context. And for the first time in well over a decade, the market is grappling with the very challenging global macro context of stagflation, which is historically very difficult for risk assets, and not to mention the aggressive tightening in financial conditions, which is being amplified by central banks. Right now, we do see that earnings upgrades are very strong in the Philippines market, and that really does set it apart from many markets at the moment. We are currently neutral, but we are looking to tilt to a modest overweight in that market.
All right, just going over some interesting corporate stories we have from this morning. Globe Telecom saying that they have actually achieved their first closing with 800 towers out of the 3,500 towers they sold to Aboitiz Frontier Tower for 10 billion pesos. This is just a month after the milestone signing. The group earlier did say this common tower agreement with Aboitiz Frontier Towers will focus on improving connectivity in Cebu, Davao, and Olongapo. So that's the first portfolio. The second portfolio, which was sold to Miascor Infrastructure, will be closing in the next few weeks. Globe also announcing that they did sign today a sale and leaseback agreement with PhilTower Consortium for the third portfolio, composed of 1,350 towers for a total of 20 billion pesos. Now, this brings Globe's total towers sold to 7,059, with total proceeds estimated at 91 billion pesos. Two things here: Globe unlocking the value of its towers, because this is going to mean additional funds that Globe can deploy to improve operations, expand, and boost connectivity. And secondly, this is part of the DICT, or the government's initiative to improve connectivity through the Common Tower Agreement Initiative. We're also looking at the Ochenco-led Petro Green Energy Corporation, which is launching its new 27-megawatt Dagohoy solar power project that is located in Bohol. The important things to know here is that it's going to be operational by the fourth quarter of 2024, expected to produce some 36 gigawatts of power every year, powering 15,000 households. And finally, Aboitiz Group's subsidiary Gold Coin, which manufactures feeds, distributes feeds as well, is exiting its Sri Lanka business. This is part of an initiative, a bigger strategy to move and focus growth in Southeast Asia and in China. China. That is it from our end. Carmina, back to you.
All right, Michelle, quick question before we let you go. Local markets, as you reported, on track to enter bear market. You told us all about the sea of red that you were seeing there just a while ago. But I guess the big question is the bloodbath. Is there a way to rein it all in? What's the way out here?
Carmina, it's very hard to time this market. It's like catching a falling knife. You'd get hurt in the process. So, you know, some analysts we talked to are really pushing for the cost averaging. You might consider, you know, not timing the market, but your time in the market. You have to see this bloodbath as opportunities really to get in because, as I mentioned, all of the blue chips, the big names that used to be very expensive are now dirt cheap. So it's all about finding the opportunities, especially if you're an investor, if you're a smart investor with a longer time horizon, and the patience, and you can wait, you think, 1, 2, 3 years when this economy recovers and the market follows, it's going to be a happy for, it's a good, it's a win. Win-win for investors who are going to invest in markets like this. When you're in a bear market, perfect opportunity to get in for those long-term investors, of course.
All right. And if you're willing, as you said, patient enough to see the paper losses and not really jump in right away and panic. All right. Thanks a lot, Michelle Ong, there joining us live. Back here in the newsroom, another grim outlook for the global economy. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, says global growth is slowing faster than what was forecast some months ago as energy and inflation woes due to Russia's war risk snowballing into recessions. While global growth is still expected at 3% this year, it is projected to slow to 2.2% in 2023. That's down from a June forecast of a 2.8% expansion. The OECD is particularly pessimistic for Europe, the most directly exposed economy to Russia's war in Ukraine.
Before the war, the economy, the world economy was recovering from COVID. In fact, some economies were recovering fairly well. Inflation was starting to creep up, but it was not so dramatic. So we are paying a very hefty price because, as a consequence of all this, we are having an inflation around the world, in many countries of the world, that we haven't seen for a long time. And central banks now have been able to start acting so that to circumvent this problem. And on the other hand, we also have a significant slowdown of the economy. So it's a very hefty price of the war.
Though far less dependent on imported energy than Europe, the U.S. is seen skidding into a downturn as the Federal Reserve jacks up interest rates to get a handle on inflation. Meanwhile, the OECD says China's strict COVID measures may limit its economic growth to only 3.2% this year. The Philippines' top economist, meanwhile, believes the government's growth target for the year remains achievable despite the damage caused by Typhoon Karding. Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan says while the latest storm to hit Luzon left behind considerable damage, it was not as catastrophic as previous typhoons such as Undoy, Ulysses, or Yolanda. The Development Budget Corporation Committee earlier pegged this year's GDP growth to settle within 6.5% to 7.5%. Moving on, President Marcos has certified as urgent the proposed spending bill for 2023. The certification was issued on September 16, stating the necessity of the budget's timely passage. It was received by House Speaker Martin Romualdez on Monday. Romualdez assures the chief executive House lawmakers are on track to approve the general appropriations bill by Wednesday. He says because it was certified as urgent by the president, the bill can now be approved on second and third reading on the same day. Meanwhile, House Ways and Means Chairperson Joey Salceda defends the 588 billion peso unprogrammed funds in the 2023 national budget. The lawmaker says the unprogrammed funds are meant as a conservative measure, wherein part of the national budget will remain on standby. Salceda says there are two ways the unprogrammed funds can be activated.
So ito pong mga nasa unprogrammed, nare-release po to two ways. One, halimbawa may utang tayo sa ADB. Pag nare-release yung sa ADB, magkakaroon tayo ng notice of loan proceeds, kukunin po yun dun sa unprogrammed. Excess revenues na hiwala sa forecast can also trigger the release. Mabenta natin ng ang PAGCOR na talagang may desisyon na po since 2017 to sell PAGCOR for mm-hmm. $250 million. So paano mo gagastusin yun? So yun eh, yung $250 billion na yun, eh pwede po yun ang mag-trigger nung $588 billion na unprogrammed budget.
The Budget Department earlier said the funds can be used for emergency situations. Of the 588 billion pesos, 150 billion is allocated for infrastructure projects and social programs. Meanwhile, Congressman Salceda says Congress can still raise the budget of the Public Works Department. The agency is seeking 628.2 billion pesos for 2023. That's lower by 75 billion pesos than this year's budget, according to Salceda. He asserts infrastructure developments can stimulate the economy.
Yung nagpapabilis ng ekonomiya, itong mga budget na tinatawag nating infrastructure, ang DPWH. Mm-hmm. So, kung babawasan mo ng 75 billion nga ang budget ng DPWH, eh ang ibig sabihin niyan, eh babagal din po ang ekonomiya. So kailangan siguro at least ma-restore namin yung 75 billion cut dyan sa DPWH. If you want to grow the economy and the growth inducing parts of the budget of the government is actually capital expenditure because that is provision of public goods. Kasi okay. kung walang kalsada, di walang negosyo.
In sports, the new NBA season is just a couple of weeks away, and two Phil-American stars are raring to lead their team. Sophomore Jalen Green is expected to score in bunches for the Houston Rockets, while veteran Jordan Clarkson will guide a rebuilding Utah Jazz squad. Steve Angeles now joins us for more on this. Steve, good afternoon.
Hi,
from
Carmina.
Manila.
Hi, good evening from Los Angeles. And yes, it is a very special time of the year as the NBA Media Days have been taking place over the past few days. And two of our Filipino-American NBA players actually took to their respective podiums today. Let's start with Jordan Clarkson of the Utah Jazz. Now, the Utah Jazz is going through a rebuilding phase. And honestly, I could not actually recognize most of his teammates. They've traded center Rudy Gobert and guard Donovan Mitchell. So Clarkson is probably one of the best players and the last leaders left on the Utah Jazz. Well, he talked about that it's natural for teams to trade, and he's been part of several trades himself over his career. He looks forward to playing with the Jazz, especially if he does end up staying there for the rest of the year. If you've heard, he's been on several trade rumors. However, it looks like they will still be moving forward with him for the time being. But while Jordan was speaking to the media, he was also talking about his experience in the Philippines and talked about how much pride he had playing and finally suiting up for Giles. He talked about the two games he played, including the one in Manila, as well as the one in Lebanon. And he actually says that he has high hopes for the Philippine basketball team, which he hopes to suit up for once again. Over in Houston, second-year star Jalen Green also took to the podium to talk about his outlook for the upcoming season. The Houston Rockets is one of the youngest teams in the league. Jalen Green is only 20 years old, yet towards the end of last season, he scored 20 points in 8 of the last 9 games, including a career-high 41 points against the Atlanta Hawks. He was pure optimism despite the Rockets finishing last in this past season. He says that they are a young team, hungry team, and they've been spending time together bonding. Now, there was one NBA Filipino-American that's been a staple of Media Day, but he did not join this year's festivities. And that's because Coach Eric Spoelstra skipped out today's festivities to welcome the birth of his third child and his first daughter, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Steve Angeles there, joining us live from Los Angeles in California. Thanks, Steve. Take care and keep safe. Well, back here in the newsroom, Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles is holding a press briefing at the Palace. Let's listen in.
Una, efforts to ensure compliance with standards of training, certification, and watchkeeping, STCW. Ito po ay diniskas ng Marina, CHED at Department of Migrant Workers. Tungo pa dito, ang DOLE naman at TESDA at CHED ay nag-discuss ng pag-upgrade ng skills of the Filipino workforce. Bahagi ito dun sa Economic Transformation Program ng ating Pangulo, kasama po dun yung educational aspect at isa po ito dun sa aspeto na yon. So, both vocational skills training and expanding the skills of our workforce is part of the economic transformation of the President. Sa atin namang carding response, tuloy-tuloy pa rin po ang NDRRMC sa kanilang assessment sa epekto ng nakaraang bagyo. Ang as of this morning's counting, ang sabi ng NDRRMC, 8 po ang reported dead, 3 pa ang missing, 32 cities and municipalities have declared that they're under a state of calamity. Ang current count for affected population is at 60,817 persons, with more than 46,000 persons staying in 976 evacuation centers across affected regions. Although maano yung numbers na ito, sinasabi ng DSWD dahil na pre-positioned po ang mga relief goods at pre-evacuated ang mga naging potential victims or victims dito, the damage is minimal in terms of the cost of human life and injuries. Nasasanay po ang mga tao dun sa pag-evacuate, dun sa mga early warnings at saka dun sa magkaroon ng maayos yung sistema sa pag-evacuate at pag-early warning sa ating mga potential victims in disaster paths. Okay. Bukas na po tayo para sa mga katanungan.
First question, Marisol Halili, TV5.
Hi ma'am, magandang umaga po.
Magandang umaga.
Ma'am, can you give us a background? Kailan po nakausap ni President Bongbong Marcos si E.S. Bersamin? And why did the President choose E.S. Bersamin to be the new Executive Secretary?
Well, primarily, it's a trust basis. Sinasabi ng ating Pangulo, he is well qualified to be the Executive Secretary, having put in so many years in the judiciary. He has the necessary legal background and the ability to deal with paperwork. Plus, of course, he is trusted and well qualified for this.
Pero ma'am, paki-explain lang po, what will be the difference when it comes dun sa mandate ng Executive Secretary and dun po sa office ngayon na Secretary Vic Rodriguez, sa Presidential Chief of Staff? Tama po ba?
Opo. Well, in the absence, wala pa pong publication kasi ang ating AO1, so we'll have to wait for that bago po natin magawa ng distinction, if any. Okay. So we'll wait for the publication.
Ay, ma'am, sorry, last na lang. Yes, does it mean na hindi pa po final yung appointment ni Attorney Vic Rodriguez as Chief of Staff?
Ang current status quo is that he entered into his duties as Chief of Staff. So that is how things stand right now.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next question, Maris Umali, GMA News.
Right, Press Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles there, giving us an update on the aftermath of Super Typhoon Karding. First off, she said that there are about 60,800 affected population due to the super typhoon. Damage has been minimal in terms of cost to human life and injuries. She also said that people are getting used to heeding early warnings from authorities. Just before we broke away from the press briefing at the palace, our colleague there also asked about the appointment of former Chief Justice Lucas Bersamin to the post of Executive Secretary. So joining us now for a reaction on that appointment is political analyst Professor Tony Lavinia. Professor Lavinia is also the president of the Movement Against Disinformation. Attorney, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right,
thank you for having me.
All right, so first off, let's talk about what Secretary Trixie Cruz Angeles just said. Lucas Bersamin appointed because he is trusted and well qualified. The president trusts the former Chief Justice. I want to get your reaction to possibly the worst kept secret. And now that it's out, Lucas Bersamin, now the Executive Secretary of President Bongbong Marcos Jr. Go ahead, Attorney Lavinia.
Well, first it's welcome because, in fact, he's very experienced. And the executive secretary really has to be a lawyer and a very good and experienced lawyer. Because he's the final guardian of all the documents that the president signs. Mm. And so you have to be trustworthy. You have to be competent. You have to have the ability to call people in the cabinet, people in Congress, political allies. And it seems to me that Secretary Bersamin, former Chief Justice, is is a perfect choice for that. I mean,
because he also has the clout.
He definitely has the clout because of his stature, and because he has the president's trust. By default, Carmina, when the president appoints you executive secretary, you will have the clout because you're going to be the little president. That's what we call the secretary.
Yeah.
What, in fact, it's surprising to me that he actually accepted this because it's really a demotion from Chief Justice, right? But I guess he wants to continue to serve. And some justices do become politicians also. And Justice Bersamin, well, you know, he has been a jurist for most of his professional life, also comes from a political family in the Ilocos region, I think, in Abra. So this is naturally for him because you have to be both a lawyer and a political person to be executive secretary.
But former E.S. Vic Rodriguez was also a lawyer. He is also quite political because of the relationship with the Marcos campaign post the loss in 2016. How crucial was it? Let's begin with that. How crucial was it that Vic Rodriguez had stepped down from his post and that almost right away a new executive secretary was named to the post? How crucial were those two moments? Go ahead.
You cannot have a gap between executive secretaries whose nothing will come out of Malacañang if you don't have an executive secretary. So that was very crucial. In fact, we already knew, right, even as he was still there. I have nothing against Attorney Vic. He had one criteria that worked for him. He was close to President Marcos. But he really doesn't have the experience in government. So it must have been very challenging, you know, I mean, to be executive secretary having no experience, no cabinet post before, and no experience in government. I mean, former executive secretary Ochoa of President Aquino at least was the provincial city administrator of Quezon City, which is a fairly big city. So but he didn't have that. That, you know, even in the legal circles, we really don't know Attorney Vic too much because he has not been that active in senior policy discussions. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's much better off as a chief of staff than executive secretary, because as chief of staff, he serves only Marcos, the president. He doesn't have to serve the cabinet. He doesn't have to be a public persona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, chief of staff is essentially someone who helps the president run his office, but has no government function at all.
Attorney Lovina, tell me about your expectations now. From the Vic Rodriguez era as executive secretary, transitioning now to former Chief Justice Lucas Bersamin as President Marcos' executive secretary, what are your expectations?
You know, Carmina, it would not be fair to make a judgment on how Secretary Rodriguez did as executive secretary, because he was there for what, 2 months? That's not fair. All that I can say is that we expect more stability with executive secretary Lucas Bersamin. I know him personally. I've worked with him in various instances, and you know.
Hello.
Yes, we're still here.
And yeah, sorry. And I worked with him, and in fact. I know him to be quite competent legally, but also a good administrator. So, you know, I might have different political views with him, but that's immaterial for that position.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Professor Tony Lavinia, their former chief or former dean of the Ateneo School of Government, also the president of the Movement Against Disinformation. Take care, Attorney Lavinia. I know that you are at a doctor's appointment, and we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks again. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.